Welcome to Career Tools. This week, what not to ask during an interview. You might be surprised. Here we go. Folks, this cast is about what not to ask during an interview, so we're going to recommend you take a look at our interviewing series. 63 podcasts about how to be interviewed. Everything in excruciating detail, and importantly, once you get into the details, you get an incredible benefit of feeling confident in an interview. And it's okay to make mistakes in an interview, but making mistakes when you're unconfident makes you perform poorly. If you're confident, you can handle a mistake. We recommend it. 63 podcasts and show notes. Take a look. So, Wendy, in the interviewing series, we actually have a list of questions to ask. And we do hint at some questions to avoid, but we really wanted to spread that guidance a little bit more broadly. And people really do ask dumb questions like, where do I sit and how much do I get and when's lunch and when can I quit?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been looking at a lot of careers pages recently some research projects I've been doing, and I am fascinated by the advice that's out there, which is just dreadful, and the stories of what candidates have asked in interviews is just outrageous.
Didn't we recently have a discussion about somebody suggested how to find out what kind of boss you're going to be working for? They actually recommended to turn the tables on the interviewer.
Oh, yeah.
And say, well, what would you do about this in the interview itself, right?
Yeah, so the interviewer asks, how have you handled this problem in the past? And the interviewee says, well, tell me first how you would handle it.
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. At that point, I'd be like, okay, this is over. I'm going to pretend to take notes and actually write my shopping list.
Yeah, and to be clear, guys, what I just suggested, asking about how your boss is going to manage you in the middle of the interview, is wrong and bad and stupid. And what Wendy just suggested, which is you turn the tables by suggesting, hey, how would you handle it? Or what's your guidance? Or, you know, why don't you help me with your theory and then I'll tell you whether or not I agree with that. That's also incredibly galactically stupid. And there will be people who will tell you that. And in part, one of the problems with interviews is most people who give advice. First of all, advice is bad, guys. You want recommendations, which is what we do. We stand behind our recommendations. And there are people who would say, it's okay to do this or it's okay to do that, having no idea what kind of person you're interviewing with. We don't make any recommendations that have any appreciable risk. And other people give advice saying, well, sure, of course you could do that because interviews are two-way streets where you're supposed to be learning about the company as well as them learning about you. Folks, no, they're not. The first part of the interview is about getting an offer. You only get to ask those kinds of questions after you have an offer. Two parts of the search, getting offers and then taking offers. And you don't get to ask questions about whether or not you're going to take the offer until after you get one. Otherwise, you're going to be put in a very awkward situation of maybe being good enough, but having asked stupid questions and never getting an offer that will allow you to decide on it. Okay, that's not in the show notes, but man, did I get started. Okay, so what's our outline? What are we going to talk about?
So these are the subjects for which you don't ask questions in an interview. We're going to cover compensation, travel, health cover, and flexible working.
Health cover, which for Americans would be health benefits or health coverage.
Yes.
Or health plan. Okay.
Yes.
Is that, I've never heard you say that. Is that the British phrase, health cover?
I'm assuming so, since I wrote it. And it doesn't feel wrong to me.
Yeah, okay. Yes. Fair enough. You say schedule, I say schedule. Yes. Good. Okay. So, look, we know that people are listening right now and say, well, I want to ask about the benefits, right?
Yeah, well, you know, absolutely.
Right? It's natural.
It's your natural human action to ask, what am I going to get out of this? Anything anybody ever asks you to do, your natural thought is, what am I going to get out of this?
And that's not, you shouldn't feel guilty about that. You're human. As a human, you're built to understand the selfishness, not that selfishness is the only way to go through life. In fact, Mike and I have read a book called The Selfish Gene, which talks about humans' tendency to be selfish because that's what kept us alive when there were tigers outside of our cave.
You only have a certain amount of energy. And if you're going to expend that energy that you've had to run after a tiger and kill it and all those things to create, then you have to know that there's something in it for you. So it's a deep human kind of caveman. It's going to be there and you can't change it. But it's also a natural human emotion that when you see that somebody's prime motive for helping you is for what they're going to get out of it, that you feel kind of icked out by it.
Right. And so what you're talking about now is the interviewer, right?
Exactly.
And so the interviewee feels naturally like, I get to learn this, and their emotional state caused them to say, this is a reasonable thing for me to ask. And they're absolutely correct. And it's also absolutely correct for the interviewer to be creeped out by that. And this is a case where it's, again, a function of timing. It's a question of when you can ask. You're not wrong to want to know it, guys, but you're wrong to act upon that. There's a difference between thinking something and feeling something and saying something and doing something.
And that's really not interview advice. It's just human psychology.
Yes.
There are two humans in the interview room,
good.
Always.
Yeah, good. Right. Okay.
And often when in the interview stage, when you're interviewing candidates as an HR person or as a manager, as a hiring manager, you don't know exactly what you're going to pay or exactly what any of the benefits are going to be. You know what the range is, but you might pay less if you find someone who can do the job and you think you can get away with it in the market to pay them less. On the other hand, if you find a superstar that you can see being promoted 5 times and being a critical asset to the company, you might pay a little more. So if you're thinking about compensation in the interview, you're thinking about something that the manager hasn't yet set. It's not set in stone right now. So any answer they give you is not necessarily right. And if you're thinking about how much am I get? How much, like, what shall I say so that they pay me more? You're not thinking about showing,
answering the question.
Exactly. And showing yes. the best ability and your skills. And those two tracks in your mind is not helpful for you.
Exactly. You can't do two things. And look, guys, whether you like to admit it or not, and I Wendy, I don't know about you. I generally have an assumption that we are probably the only people. No, there is a couple of sites. I think there's a couple of sites that you and I have talked about that actually we generally agree with the tone, and they tell people things like, no, don't do that, whatever you do. But we have a general fundamental philosophy which says that the interviewer is absolutely in charge of the interview. And so therefore, your interests in the interview are really fairly small, guys. Now, we're not saying you shouldn't have interests. We're saying that if you show those interests, and those interests are in conflict with what the interviewer's interests are, which is to learn about you, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. And again, we want you to know, we want you to get a great salary. We want you to have wonderful compensation. But as Wendy said, if you're thinking about compensation, you're not thinking about answering the questions. And every moment you talk about compensation is a moment that you're not thinking about telling them about skills. And if it's an hour-long interview, and by the way, I just conducted an interview yesterday here in Chicago, and in that interview, we spent 4 hours on the tell me about yourself question. And Wendy and I were just starting, before we started recording, we said, how can anyone interview for an hour and truly know what they're getting? You can't. No. You're guessing. And if you take 5 of those minutes to have a side discussion about compensation, when in fact, as Wendy just said, compensation isn't set yet. It doesn't get set until the manager says, I'm ready to make an offer. Now I have to figure out what my budget will allow and what HR will allow, what the compensation people will allow, depending upon the role. And those 5 minutes in an hour-long interview where there's 5 minutes of admin at the front and the back, that's 10% of the interview, you not being able to sell yourself. So I assume you want to echo what I said, I know that sounds terrible, about timing.
Yeah, absolutely. The time to talk about compensation is after you have the offer. Just think about any sales situation you're in. You go into, you know, the posh watch shop in town, and you say to the guy, I've got $100. And the first thing he shows you is something that's $150. Real estate agents do that too. Everybody knows that you give them a range and they start by showing you something that's outside your range. Same with car salesmen. They always show you the thing with all the bells and whistles, and they make you fall in love with it. And then they tell you the price, and you're now in love, and you're like, well, maybe I can make that work. That's you in this scenario, in the interview scenario, you are the salesman and the product. And so yes. In the interview, all you need to concentrate on is
making them love you, selling yourself. Yeah.
Telling them about all the benefits and bells and whistles with which you come. So
don't tell them that, don't send them a message that there's something they're not going to love because you're asking too soon about compensation, and they will immediately draw the conclusion there's going to be compensation pressure in the discussion later. And if there are two people who are equal and one person leads the interviewer to believe that there's going to be compensation pressure and the other one doesn't, the other person is more likely to get the offer, whether you like that process or not. That's the way it works. And that person then later could apply compensation pressure, but it's after they have the offer. And who's the person that made the mistake? You, by asking about compensation.
And the whole thing about don't be the first person to say a number, that's not what we're talking about here.
Oh, that's so dumb.
Yes, it is. But it's also not what we're talking about here.
So next point, you mentioned travel.
Yeah, so travel is often advertised in job adverts, especially if there's a lot of travel, because the person who is hiring wants to eliminate all those people that can't meet the travel requirements for whatever reason. And there is no way that a company that advertised 100% travel will go to 0%, even if you're a superstar.
Not percent for us Americans means going from 0 to 100 to zero.
Yeah, yes. If the person in this job needs to be in a customer site 5 days a week and those customers are spread all over, you're going to end up doing a lot of traveling, whether you like it or not. And if that doesn't suit your lifestyle, wherever you are in your life, then don't apply for it, because it's just not going to happen that they're going to be able to take that piece out.
And they're going to probably overstate the amount of travel, simply to avoid spending a bunch of time with a resume in an interview where somebody says, well, actually, I can only do 5% travel. So they'll say 50 when in fact it's probably only 25, right? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, good? Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. And travel is negotiable.
Yeah, it's just like compensation. It's a form of compensation.
And 100% might be able to mean leave Monday morning early and return in time for dinner on Friday. And it often does. That's not actually 100%.
Right, it's not.
It's only 80. But I don't know if the math was quite right there.
You're right. People think of that as 100, but it's 80 because it's 4 weeknights. It's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. That's 80. Now, some of you are going, wow, really? I could be gone every weeknight because Friday's not a weeknight. Actually, folks, it is. It's not a weekend night. It's a Friday, and that's a work day. And I probably just blew a bunch of people's minds. Yeah. And guys, we're not suggesting that you should want to travel 100% or even 80%. We're making the point that you probably don't know how companies think about it. And you probably some of you are scared about travel. And there's nothing wrong with saying, that's not the career. That's not what I want. That's not what's important for my family, for my community, for my church or my synagogue, you know, for my mosque. That's not the point we're making. My thinking is 75% might mean you can have every Friday in the office, or every Friday and every Monday, or every Friday and Monday at home.
Yeah, and it might mean 4 locations on rotation, and then you can feel at home in 4 cities, even if you only go there once a week. You know, you can make friends, and you can have a gym, and all those kind of things.
If you're not a person who travels, you don't think about that, but going to the same location every time, take it from somebody who travels 200 days a year, is a different experience. The sense of knowing where you're going and knowing that when I'm in Chicago, that hotel has a good gym and I can take my gym clothes and I'm going to get a chance to work out because that helps me live a longer life. That's better than going to someplace in Western Kansas, followed by someplace in Eastern Washington. Both lovely places, by the way, but probably more difficult to go to, more decisions to be made, and so on. And to the point about compensation, travel is negotiable, and if you're really good and they really want you, they'll say, okay, we could get 100 down to 90. We could get 75 to 50 for the right person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or some other combination, you know, 4 long days on the customer site and then the 5th day as part of your weekend. You could do what they call compressed hours, where you do all your hours in the week on 4 days and then you have 3 days off on the weekend. So all sorts of things are possible. But if you ask about them in the interview,
yeah,
then you start to imply that that's the only thing that's important to you.
And remember, guys, it's not the only thing that's important to you, but if it's one of the first questions you ask at that moment, they are thinking that is the most important thing, when most recruiters and interviewers believe that the most important thing should be you selling them at that moment. And so it's not just that it's not the most important thing to you, because of course we know it isn't. It is the thing you appear to be most worried about. But the combination of you asking about something that they don't expect, when they expect you to be asking about the job and your ability to impact on it, because that's what happens before they make the offer, it's a double negative for you. And again, it's a triple negative because, again, you're not talking about how good you are, and that gives you less chance to tell them, I'm awesome. And that makes them less willing to make you an offer. And of course, travel doesn't matter if you don't get an offer, because you won't be traveling without an offer.
No.
Now, you mentioned negotiation, though, which is not our gig, really.
No. When I started writing this, I realized that I'd made the first 2 points and I'd said, you could negotiate them once you have the offer. And then I thought, oh dear, people are going to think that you can negotiate compensation and hours and travel and the healthcare. And
well, people do believe that, right?
You can't. You can't get everything you want. And think about it. If you got everything you wanted, the level of resentment in the company.
You're spending goodwill.
Yeah. You're just starting in a hole. So yeah. Choose your battles. Choose the one that's most important to you.
Asking for less travel is not negotiation. This is the fundamental problem. People say to me all the time, and guys, I'm sorry, particularly young people, well, I want to negotiate that. You're not negotiating when you ask a company to give you more money. That's not negotiation. If you are in a negotiation, I have one thing, you have another, we're defining them differently, and we have points we're far apart from one another, and we're going to have to meet in the middle somewhere with different services, different products, different pricing, different payment terms, different insurance, different logistics, and so on. We're going to meet in the middle. You can't meet in the middle with a company. What are you going to do? Say, I've been holding back 10% of my intellect, and now you're going to see how total genius I am, and that wasn't available to you, but now if you'll give me 25% less travel, I'll give you my best effort. There's an assumption that you're giving the best effort. There's nothing more for you to give. Negotiation would be, I'll take less pay for less travel. That would be negotiation. Yeah. You're giving them money back in return. You're buying back the travel, right? That would be negotiation. So be cautious about that. We use the idea of negotiation to suggest there may be some flexibility on the part of the company, and the single biggest determinant of their willingness to be flexible is how awesome you are. And every minute you spend discussing things like, how much do I get paid? Before you have an offer, and what my travel is or what my health cover is, those things are all time taken away from your ability to prove your awesomeness. That may be the best description of what you and I believe that I think I've ever done.
I think you're right.
And it's a public cast, which is good.
Yeah. Okay. Okay, so the next one is health cover or health coverage or however you want to term it.
Right.
And again, the problem with asking about health cover in an interview is the implication that you're only taking the job because of the health benefits.
Well, that's not what I mean, though, Wendy. That's not what I mean.
I know that.
It doesn't
not
matter.
What you mean.
It's not. Well, it I would matter. Say it differently. I would say that it's not the implication; it's the inference.
Yes.
The interviewer draws the inference, and you, unfortunately, you are responsible for what you say, and you're also responsible for the inferences that they draw. If, in fact, you want what they have, you better avoid them drawing negative inferences about you.
Yeah. As we keep saying, the interviewer wants to believe that you are taking a job to serve the company, not so that your children can have braces or whatever it is. They want to believe that you're genuinely going to add value, and you have to, in the interview, you have to believe that too in order to come across as genuinely offering that.
Yes.
You have to put things like all the questions you want to ask about what do I get just out of your mind. One of the things I've seen in long-term, people who've been long-term unemployed.
You and I have talked about this.
Yeah. Is the desperation thing. It's like, I'm desperate for this job because I've run out of money. I need the health cover. I'm going to be evicted, yeah. My children are hungry, whatever. And I completely understand that's part of the reason why I do this job is because I want to help those people. And desperation is never attractive. We all know that.
Yeah, the solution is not being desperate about the benefits. The solution is convincing them you're awesome. Yes. And then the benefits come with the offer. And if, in fact, you get an offer and the benefits aren't there, we would completely support you turning down that job because the job doesn't give you what you need to take care of your family. That's a good decision. And if you've made them love you enough to give you an offer, that's good practice for the next interview you have when they will give you the benefits you need for your family. But if you go through interviews expressing your desperation or hinting at your desperation or asking too soon about these things, you won't get offers and it will become a negative. It will become a vicious cycle rather than a virtuous cycle. And you will feel that you're not getting the job and you'll feel more desperate. And so therefore you'll continue to talk about the things you need. And it's because you're not talking about how you can be great in the job. And it's sad when we hear it. Guys, we hear it and we don't want that to happen to you. Oh, we don't.
That breaks my heart.
Yeah.
And I started, when I was writing this, I was like, okay, well, maybe you can ask a question of clarification, like if they said something and you didn't hear it or you didn't understand it. But when I thought about that, the only questions of clarification I could think of were ones that are essentially asking about the benefits. So even if you said, oh, I'm sorry, did you say the whole family was covered or just me? You're still asking the same thing.
Yep. Don't
do
it.
How much is this benefit worth? So just to make it easy, just don't do it.
Don't ask
anything until you have the offer.
Where do I sit? How much do I get? When's lunch? When can I quit? Give me back my wheel. You're not ready yet.
Your job in the interview is to show you you're the best individual in this post and that you'll provide the organization with the best results.
Yep. What about flexible work? And this is probably, I would say, pay and flexible work are the two things that I hear more about. Health coverage, and in the States right now, of course, there's a lot of discussion about the Affordable Care Act. And so that sort of roils that discussion in all kinds of ways, good and bad, I think, for a lot of people. And travel, I think we get less of because there's a smaller percentage of jobs that actually have travel. And by the way, can I go back to travel for just a minute, Wendy? Would you mind? Guys, if you're having a desk job, an office job, but you're not in sales, you're not in field service, you're not in customer service or client service or you're a consultant or something, a company could say, not mention travel, and you could not think anything of it, and then you could discover you have to travel 2 days a month. 2 days a month is technically 10%. And no company would say, that's not true. I'm sorry, I'm overstating it. It would surprise me if a company would say for a professional job for which you had to have a degree that they would actually say 10% travel. Right, Wendy? It would just be, dude, you have to travel every once in a while. It's not a big deal. You're an adult and you can travel. And so just be clear, the whole travel thing, most of you would say, well, wait, don't they have to put 10% travel? No, 10% travel is a rounding error, guys. They're not going to tell you 10%, and they're going to expect you to do 10% when you're thinking it's zero because they didn't talk about it. And if you then said later, this job wasn't advertised with any travel, they would look at you as if you had five heads. Like, really? You think that this job is so specifically described in the job description that you think 2 days a month is somehow a problem to go to our Chicago office? Yeah, no, sorry. And I say that, guys, to give you some sense of, don't take this the wrong way. I'm going to be the person who tells you the things you need to know, whether you like me or not. And I've said this before on air. I don't care if you hate me. I just want you to be effective and successful. If you don't know that, they expect you to know that. And you're wrong because they're the ones with the power. And you may not like that. I'm sorry. That's just the way the world is. Deal with it. Suck it up. Sorry.
I saw a question on a website that I actually quite respect a few days ago that said, my company is asking me to go to an offsite for 3 days. It was the first time in 4 months that this person had been asked to go somewhere. And she said, can they make me go? And the lady who answered it said, yes, they can make you go. Or at least they can require you to go. They can't actually put you on the phone.
Right. Yeah. And the issue of that is they can require you to go because a requiring to go essentially implies consequences if you don't. The company can't make you do anything. They can simply consequence you. Yeah.
And the questioner continued, I have problems with childcare, which is completely understandable. But really, if somebody said, would you like to go and spend the weekend at a spa? Wouldn't you be able to work out childcare? So if you can do it for good things, you can do it for what you perceive to be bad things too.
And look, folks, you may be insulted by this, but if you're an adult and you have a child, you're expected to take care of that child. And the company is not responsible for taking care of that child. They expect you to do that. Now, there will be reasonable accommodations made, but you brought the child into the world. You're expected to raise the child. And a couple of days, once a quarter, is not too much to ask. And you may incur some expenses. And those are not expenses you can bill the company, because they're not responsible for the upbringing of your child.
On the other hand, you do get to keep your job.
Yeah. And people would say, well, they wouldn't fire me. And no, you're right. They wouldn't fire you guys. What would happen is your manager would remember it and say at the end of the year, everybody else is getting a 5 for teamwork and you're getting a 3 or a 4 out of a 5. And HR is going to notice it. When they ask me why, they're going to say, look, I asked her to go to a offsite. I gave her a month to plan it, to be ready for it, to handle her home life situation. And I want to come back to that in just a second. And she said she didn't want to go, and I couldn't force her, and she stayed in the office and worked. But the fact is, what I needed her to do was be at the offsite, and that's a reasonable thing to ask, and she chose not to do it. And so I have to assume that in other things I ask her to do in the future that are reasonable and appropriate for her job, she's going to tell me no. And that's not team play, period. One more thing, guys. If you have a special needs child, okay, it's not wrong for you to say to your boss, hey, look, I've got a special needs child. Can you please give me as much notice as possible? It's not as easy as, and the child is 2 or 5 and not yet in school. And it's completely reasonable for you to say that to your boss. I would really appreciate it if you could give me as much notice as possible because I have a special needs child. That's not going to get you a 3 or a 4 on your annual review. It's not. That is you being a professional and helping your boss understand how to manage you. Because we know a lot of you don't have bosses who do one-on-ones. And that kind of thing would come up, inevitably, I would hope, in a one-on-one. So we're not suggesting that if you have children or you have a difficult childcare situation because of an elderly parent or all kinds of other things, we're not suggesting that makes you difficult or hard to employ or any of those kinds of things. But that doesn't mean there aren't consequences for what would be a normal childcare situation.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I hope that was helpful. And probably, Wendy, we need to do some casts on what's appropriate and what's not appropriate and what our recommendations are regarding your childcare situation and how that impinges upon your career, right? That just occurred
absolutely.
To me. Yeah, okay, good. So another tangent, but let's get back to flexible work hours. I think this is much more prevalent than it was 20 years ago because telecommuting, a bad idea generally, is in fact much more widespread than it used to be.
Yeah, and there is so much written about flexible working that people assume that every company is allowing flexible working, every company is allowing people to work from home, that every company is, if they say that you can't work from home, they're unreasonable, which is not true. If you ask about, it's a benefit to you, right?
Yeah,
you
exactly.
Want it.
Flexible work hours, working from home is absolutely a compensation issue and a benefit to you.
Because if it weren't, you wouldn't be asking about it, right?
Exactly.
And if you ask about it in an interview, the interviewer hears, I'll work for you, but only under my conditions.
And by the way, if you are a rock star in your industry and have written books and have spoken at conferences, you could probably do that after they make you an offer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And some people have had bad experience with flexible working. You know, people that turn up late, leave
right.
early, have 2-hour lunches. They don't hear, I'll work harder for you if I'm not worrying about how I'm going to pick my kids up from school. Or I can get more done in the quiet of my home.
They don't hear that.
By the way,
right.
You can't.
You can't.
And you can have my commute if I don't have to sit in traffic, which is also generally not true. Because after about a month, you start getting up later.
Yeah.
And there are benefits to the company for people working at home. They don't have to purchase office space. They
right.
don't necessarily have to have the same level of equipment. But when you're interviewing, you want to stay in the box. They have an ideal candidate in mind that fits in a box.
It's in a box. Exactly. That's a great way to describe
and
it.
And you want to be the model of their
you
ideal
be the
candidate
best guy in
the box.
That box. Yes. Exactly. And if you're the best guy in the box, they'll discuss after they've given you an offer whether or not you get to get out of the box. Yeah. Or, again, timing is an issue here. We recommend not asking it until after you have the offer. There's another thing to consider with timing, which is maybe in the first year you can't telecommute or work from home, but after a year of high performance, in other words, not just high performance in the interview, but high performance in the job, you can ask for a little bit more flexibility because you're moving on the path toward becoming a rock star, even if you haven't published a book, as an example.
Allowing you to work from home or work flexibly is a huge risk to the company, much more of a risk than giving you more money or allowing you to travel more or less or giving you health coverage. That not having complete control over your bodily movements, I don't know that that's the right phrase, but it's a much bigger risk for the company. So you might want to, I would recommend that you give something, as in give awesome results for 6 months before you ask for that.
Good point. Okay, Wendy, I think we spent longer on that one than you probably expected.
We did.
40 minutes. But again, this is, and I know some of you will write in and say, Mark talks too much. And I don't apologize for that. We want you to understand the actual thing to do. And then we want you to understand the why. So when you get a situation that's 20% different than the actual thing we're recommending, you know why we would recommend what we would recommend. So you can make a decision based on the underlying why, not just the say these words. And then if they ask you a question that doesn't allow you to say those words, you're stuck. Yeah. Okay, so wrap us up, Wendy.
In this class, we covered compensation, travel, health cover, and flexible working, and asking questions about those in interviews. And as you just said, we gave the rationale. So if you've got anything that you want to ask about that's similar, as in a benefit to you,
right,
then the same rationale applies. And hopefully we've given you enough of an insight into the recruiter's mind or the hiring manager's mind as to how your question about the benefit to you will be perceived.
And if nothing else, guys, remember, interviews are about selling yourself. And every minute you have is precious. And if you're asking about things that aren't about what you've done and how well you can do it for them, you're losing minutes in the race to the top of the box. So every question about what do I get becomes a negative, simply not because of the inference that they draw about your selfishness, but in addition, the time it takes for them to not give you an answer that will be helpful, frankly, and also the time it takes out of the interview. So don't ask. Okay. Thanks, Wendy.
Thanks.
Great cast. Loved it.
Bye, everyone.
That's it, everybody. Hopefully this helps. Too many people ask the wrong questions when they get interviewed.